Boker Tov. Our topic this morning is Torah and, which is a very complicated and sensitive and ambitious topic. And to obviously to do justice and a full analysis of this topic would require many mornings like this. So our goal is not to share a comprehensive analysis of different approaches to this question, but to reflect on a cursory level on some of the questions and issues that come up in this context, like a 10-minute, as an expression of the things that we have been talking about until now in terms of our core Masorah and what are the values that we celebrate. And this is an important part of that conversation, because if we're trying to create an inspired community, if we're trying to find our own deeper connections to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so we need to explore all the different areas of our life and figure out how that integrates into a holistic Torah life. So we need to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam in all of our ways and figure this out, each one of us for ourselves. And as we do that, and as we start thinking about it, I'm mindful that we each have a different way of looking at this question, and we have different experiences. So this is an open conversation, and as we'll see in a minute, there are different ways of looking at this. And whatever we're going to say here is not meant, obviously it's not authoritative, but it's also not meant as a judgment on anybody's life choices, on anybody's relatives, on their children, on their grandparents, on their brothers-in-law, whatever. Whatever you do is your thing. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about specific people or specific case studies. We're talking in theory about how we should think about the questions related to our life as Torah observant Jews and secular studies and the secular knowledge that exists out there, which the Gemara calls what we could call Chachma Bagoyim Tamin, that there is undoubtedly Chachma out there. So two books that are worthwhile to think about as you explore this issue. One of them is a book that was just recently republished. It was originally published years ago, and then it was republished now under the Maggid imprint. It's called Judaism's Encounter with Other Cultures. This is one very important book on this topic, which I'm moving through. I haven't gotten through the whole thing. And the other one is, in addition to some other discussions, there are two essays here in the first volume of Leaders of Faith of the late Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, two essays in here that deal with this question. We'll relate to one of them. So, last week, I shared by email a monograph authored by the late Rav Shimon Schwab. Rav Schwab was, for many decades, the rabbi of the Breuer's community in Washington Heights. But before he was the rabbi of the Breuer's community in Washington Heights, he went there in the late 50s. Before that, he was the rabbi of a shul in Baltimore, Maryland, not far from where I grew up, down Park Heights Avenue. But before he came to Baltimore in the late 1930s, before the war, he was a rabbi in a small community in Germany where he was raised in a Frankfurt community. He was raised in Frankfurt. He went to study for a little bit of time in Eastern Europe in the Mir, which impacted him, and we'll talk about why that's an important historical tidbit in a second. In the early 1930s, when Rav Schwab was a rav in a community in Germany, he was plagued by a question. And what's interesting is that this question comes up throughout his lifetime. I don't think, maybe I did once when I was a kid on one of these little Pirchei trips that we took to New York, but I don't think I ever met Rav Schwab. And he was bothered with a question that he sent to several Rabbanim, several Gaonim, early in his life. He comes back to it a little bit later, and then he comes back to it even more fully in the description that you have in that article that I said, that monograph, Elu Ve'elu, these and those. And that is the question of secular studies. because Rav Schwab is reared in Frankfurt. Frankfurt is the seat of what tradition?
Yankees.
Right? What specific rabbinic tradition? That's right. The Torah im Derech Eretz philosophy, which he has that little acronym in his article, TIDE, T-I-D-E, Torah im Derech Eretz. Not to be put in the laundry.
Very clean.
Very clean, right. Very upstanding, very clean. So Rabbeinu Hirsch, so Rav Schwab took over what's called the Breuer's community because Rabbi Breuer, Zichron Levracha, was the grandson of Rabbi Schwab. Rabbi Schwab, he was a very significant, it's hard to understate how significant he was, as a rabbinic personality in Germany, who we're not going to focus on today, although we'll reference him in a little bit from a biographical standpoint. So Rav Schwab revolutionizes the way of looking at Jewish learning by instituting a program that's going to include secular studies as well as Torah learning. This is the Torah Derech Eretz issue. So here is this young Rav Shimon Schwab, who is raised in the Rav Hirsch milieu, but also is educated, spends a period of time at the Mir, in Mir, not Mir in Brooklyn, Mir in Mir, in Eastern Europe, and then also spends, I think, a weekend, a Shabbos, some short period of time with the Chavetz Chaim in Raden. So Rav Schwab is, I'm now editorializing, imagining, is exposed to two models. He's exposed to the model of Torah and Derech Eretz, and he's exposed to the model of the Eastern European Lithuanian yeshiva that doesn't have secular studies. So he's trying to figure out what role, I guess, where he fits in this and what role people think. So in the early 1930s, he sent a letter to a group of great rabbinic authorities. And we have several of these responses. Some of them we'll look at today. We have answers from Rav Elchanan Wasserman. That appears in the Sefer called Kovetz Mamarim. Rav Elchanan was the great Rosh Yeshiva Baranovich. He was killed by the Nazis, but before that he was arguably one of the preeminent giants of Torah in Eastern Europe. He's sent to Rav Baruch Ber Leibowitz of Kamenetz, the Kamenetz Rosh Yeshiva, who was one of the closest disciples of Rav Chaim Halevi Soloveitchik. He's sent to Rav Eliezer Bloch, the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, who escaped with his brother-in-law, Rav Motel Katz, came to Cleveland during the war, and then they established Telz in Cleveland, or Wycliffe, and then they, you know, the branch, what's that?
Close enough.
And then the branch opens in Chicago. He also sent this question to the Rogatchov Gaon, who at that time was still living, early 1930s, he was living in Dvinsk, same town as the Or Sameach. And we actually have, I didn't put it in your packet, but there's a little postcard. The Rogatchov would answer questions on postcards. We have a copy of the postcard. He sent this question to many Gedolim as to what do they think is the place for secular studies. The answer to this question can be preceded with a preface. A preface that's authored by the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Eliezer Bloch, which is on page one. This is printed in a Poale Agudas Yisrael newspaper, not newspaper, like a Yarchon, called Hama'ayan. I think it still exists today. Hama'ayan. In the 70s, where they published this not well-known tshuva from Rav Avram Yitzchak Bloch, Av Bezin and Ram in Telz, Be'inyan Limud Shar Chachmos. Now, what does Rav Bloch write? Not Rav Elio, it's Rav Avram Yitzchak Bloch. Al Dvar She'ilas Malas Kvo Toraso Levara Es Ha'ora. Regarding your question, he doesn't write the questioner, but the questioner was Rav Shimon Schwab. To answer, to clarify the ruling, Benogea Lilmod Chochmos Ha'amim. And to answer the question regarding learning the wisdom of the nations. Va'al Devar Hachinuch Hanog Be'eretz Ashkenaz Bechlal, regarding the educational system in Ashkenaz. He says, Omnam. It is difficult in these circumstances, in these issues, in these specific questions, to answer a tshuva brura, a clear, I guess we would call unequivocal answer. It's hard to give what we would call a psak halacha on these issues of how you should set up an educational philosophy. Why? Ki inyanim ke'elu, issues like this, benuyim harbe ma'od al hashkafos, these are predicated largely on questions of hashkafa, of outlook. Videos and opinions hamakusharos that are connected in chelek ho'agada with the homiletic, more philosophical component of learning. Not a halachic question which you say, it's kosher or it's treif, it's tor, it's tameh, it's osur, it's mutter. These are much more nuanced and not firm, but varied and colorful types of issues that come back to values. V'gam yesh b'zeh ha'ofi ha'miyuchad sheb'inyani agada. And there is a unique style of learning that when it comes to studying agada, k'mo b'inyani deos umidos, that even though sha'av sheish b'em kama esim v'lavim, there are mitzvos, there are halachos involved. However, im kol zeh, ein l'kboa b'hen masmeros, you cannot fix in them nails, k'mo b'chelek halacha. Haynu lahotzi psak haroy lakol, ki tuluyim harbe ma'od im mezeg ha'adam. You can't give one universal psak. Someone comes to you with a chicken. Either it's kosher or it's treif. But here, he says, it depends on the nature of the person. Mezeg ha'adam, v'darko ha'miyuchad, and his specific approach. V'gam kein tuluyim b'tanai hazman. They also depend on the circumstances of the time. V'hamakom, and in the place, v'hamatzav, and the condition, v'hasviva, and the environment. So the Tzolz'er Rosh Yeshiva then goes on to discuss what is his view of secular studies, and we're not going to do that because that would take many, many hours. There are many, I cannot tell you how many articles, and how many books, and how many people's lives have been invested into this question from time immemorial and continuing. The nuances of which aspects of secular learning, which disciplines, what about ones that border along philosophical questions, which we know was in the times of Yishon was a big question about learning philosophy. But without discussing that, the first point that we need to recognize is that there isn't one hard and fast halachic psak on this question, according to the Tzolz'er Rosh Yeshiva. Said it very much depends. It's not the same as other areas of halacha. So it'll depend on many different factors. And so we need to understand that there are going to be different valid approaches to this question today in different places among our children and our families and our constituents and our neighbors and our greater Jewish community. A lot of this comes back to what we spoke about the previous time, which were some of the key fundamental questions within our community that are issues of hashkavos and deos. So for example, the issue of nuance. So that question, of course, is at the core, depending on how you view nuance, is going to be at the core of how you view different aspects of secular learning. The question of kodesh and chol. Well, this is all chol, so how do you relate to it? And even the question, the third issue that we articulated, which we rushed at the end, so we didn't really have time to fully develop it, but the issue of what is the role of humanity in history and in life, and how much personal responsibility do we take for the world around us? Well, how much engagement with the world around us in terms of the secular learning? So these three yesodos of hashkafa, of our masorah specifically, are of course going to play out in this question. Now there are mekoros and chazal. I'm going to share with you two. But there are many different interpretations of these, many different traditions of how to apply these in any given circumstance. So go to the next page, page one in the Makoros, on the Gemara side. The Gemara Shabbos, Daf Ayin, Hayom, and Aleph, in the context of the halachos of kosher and matir, ends up talking about a magosh, which might be a magician, and then after talking about the magosh, it's talking about L'chashev b'tkufos umazalos, which is assessing, understanding, analyzing tkufos and mazalos. Tkufos are periods of the year, meaning the seasons, the equinox and the whatever they call those things, the solstice, exactly, the tkufos and the mazalos. The mazalos are the astronomy, the different heavenly bodies, which for Chazal were very important. I have a brother-in-law who has, he decided this is his interesting hobby. He has a gigantic telescope in his living room. He wrote a book about studying the stars. You know, you think nobody's interested in this. No, no, there are people who are still interested in this work, and it is quite fascinating.
Does he have a skylight in his living room?
I don't think so. I think they have an upstairs. Oh, so maybe in his bedroom. I didn't. I've never checked. No, he takes it outside.
Okay.
So the Chazal have a lot to say about the mazalos. So Gemara has a comment. Amreb Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Amreb Yochanan, Minayin, how do you know shemitzvah al ha'adam l'chashiv tkufos mazalos? How do you know that it's a mitzvah to calculate the seasons and the constellations? Shenemar. You should guard and do, because it is the wisdom and insight before the eyes of the nations of the world. What is wisdom that the nations of the world appreciate, that they see? Go explain to the nations of the world. A Reb Chaim, maybe not so popular. It's not something that you go to a regular conference at the McCormick Center. They're not handling by Reb Chaim. But you know what they are talking about? They're talking about science. They're talking about the stars. They're talking about outer space. NASA. Havi Omer Zechishuv Tkufas Mazalos. Okay, now some of you are thinking, this is very limited. It's only one example. It's only Tkufas and Mazalos. It's all true. Every one of these, we could unpack for many hours. What are the limitations? What are the mitigating factors? How expansive? How limited? But this is one example, just one example. And on the opposite side, you have a different perspective. Next page, the Gemara in Menachos Sadi Testament Beis. A story. Shaul ben Dama ben Achosel shol Rabbi Yishmael. What's the context here? The context here, why is this in Maseches Menachos? What is Menachos about? Which part of the karbanos?
Not meat.
Right. What is it? Right. Korban mincha. So in the context of the korban mincha, we have a discussion about the bread that is for the kohen, what we call lechem haponim. So the pasuk says lechem haponim have to be lifonai tamid. So the Gemara has a discussion. What does it mean that the bread has to be tamid? So in that context, the Gemara well says, well, we also have to learn on a non-stop basis for Hagisabo Yomo Balailo. So in that context, the Gemara is talking about what is the obligation of a person vis-a-vis the legal requirement of Talmud Torah. That's the discussion here in the context of Menachos. Okay. So Ben Dama, I don't know who this person is, except for his biographical note that he is the sister's son of Rabbi Yishmael. He asks his uncle, Rabbi Yishmael, Kagon ani, so I, shalamadati kol haTorah kula, that I have already learned the entirety of Torah. Mau lilmod chachmas yivanis. May I learn, what do I have about Chachmas Yevanis? Now this, by the way, is also a very complicated phrase, Chachmas Yevanis, because in different places in Shas, this comes up in different ways. The Gemara has a curse on somebody who learns something related to Chachmas Yevanis. Maybe it's sign language, maybe it's Greek language, maybe it has something to do with revolutionary activity, because there was a separate story in the Gemara about the siege between Aristobulus and Hyrcanus and a pig, and not for today. But so Chachma Yevanis is also a story. What is Chachma Yevanis? Is it the same as Tchishuv Tchuvas HaMazalos? Is it something else? Is it philosophy? Is it science? Let's leave that for a second. Well, no, let's leave it for good, for us, for right now. But keep in mind, it's a lot more nuanced than we're presenting today. So he says, Kara Olav HaMikra HaZeh. He asked, Ben Dama asked him, and he read to him this pasuk. Lo Yomush Sefer HaTorah HaZeh Mipicha V'Agisabo. That's it. Yomu V'Layla. Say Ubedok, go and check. Shah, go find a time. She'in Olom Menayom. That's not daytime. V'Lom Alayla. And not nighttime. V'Lomobo Chachmas Yivanis. That's it. Knock yourself out. You can find a day that's not day or night. There's a good place to learn Chachma Yavanis. Because otherwise, there is no place for Chachma Yavan. Because you need to be learning all the time. V'ogisbo yom v'layla nonstop. So we see there are already different ways in Chazal of viewing secular knowledge. Again, you could resolve these two Gemaras with different answers. But the question is a question that we need to deal with in Chazal. It's not just in the makoros, in the abstract, in the learning sense. It's also in the personality sense, in the people. The Baalei HaMesorah. We spent a lot of time developing the tradition and the people who stood for the tradition and who they are and how important they are. Well, you look through to tradition, you'll find people like the Rambam. The Rambam was an unabashed student of medicine and of philosophy, Aristotelian philosophy. And then you had, now I'm going to oversimplify now for a second, but if you look at Chachmei Sfarad in general, especially the golden age of Muslim Spain, you find a higher involvement in secular studies. The same thing if you look at, fast forward a few hundred years, many Italian Rabbanim, like the Bartonura and the Rav Avadia Sforno and other Italian Rabbanim, more involved in secular learning. Whereas if you look at many of the Ashkenazi Rabbanim, may have been a function of persecution or whatever, but other scholars have pointed out that in the Rashi, Tosfos, late Rishonim Chachmei Ashkenaz and Hasidic Ashkenaz, you do not find an emphasis on secular studies. You move further later on, so you'll find, it's noted that the Rama was a student of philosophy, Rav Moshe Isserles from Krakow in the 16th century, and then you'll find those who were, more emphasized. So you look through the generations, and you see in every generation figures who are more engaged with the secular knowledge already back in the times of the Gemara, and those who were less. Past the Rama, you talk about Rav Azriel Hildesheimer, we'll talk about in a little bit, and the Sri Deish, and Rav Soloveitchik, and many other great Gaonim through the generations. Some were, some weren't. So it's true on a Makoros level, there are different approaches. Personalities, there were different approaches. And then historically, there were different trends. So to appreciate this, take a look. I just gave you the table of contents. This is an article that I did not send you because it's 122 pages. It's slightly expanded in this book that I mentioned before, Judaism's Encounter with Other Cultures. It has four sections. One section is Gerald Blitzstein about the study in the times of Chachmei Chazal. Then he has a piece from a long section, a couple, like 150 pages, from David Berger about Jewish-Christian relations. Then he has this article from Dr. Lyman, and then at the end, a piece from Rav Aaron Zecher Tzadok V'Kadosh Livracha, Torah and General Culture, Confluence and Conflict. That's also like a 100-page essay from Rav Lichtenstein. It's for not a short vacation. It's for like a longer, more miyusha vacation when you have like a good month. You need a sabbatical for this article. So the third section here is Dr. Lyman's article. Here it's called Rabbinic Openness to General Culture in the Early Modern Period in Western and Central Europe, Schneer Z. Lyman. So this, what you're looking at, this you can get online. It's 122 pages. You could download the whole thing. Some of you did not get the article that I emailed because it bounced back, the one from Rav Schwab. Let's just say this email, it's a heavy lift, 122 pages. But all you need to do to get this, if you want to get it on your own, if you have a couple of days on the train and a cup of coffee, LymanLibrary.com. And if you go to the bottom, you see where it says list of publications. You click on that. Then it takes you to the next page. You find this called Rabbinic Responses to Modernity. You click on it, you get the whole article. It's awesome. So here, Dr. Lyman, the great Rav Dr. Schneer Lyman, Hamachuna in our house, Cousin Schneer. So Cousin Schneer has a history dotting every I and crossing every potential T of the development in modern history. First, he taught transitions from pre-modern to modern, going through the impact of the Enlightenment, and then the questions of how different Rabbanim, so he talks about Chacham Bernays, the Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, Rav Hirsch, and then at the end, Rav Israel Hildesheimer. So here you have a survey and a full analysis. It doesn't get better than this. This is Mamish, the best of the best, and you can go through it so you can see how different places on the spectrum different Rabbanim viewed the role of secular studies historically. So we're not going to study that now, but we have the Makoros, we have the people, we have the history. We could spend a whole year studying each of these in depth. But maybe what we're going to do instead is just take a few minutes to reflect on, now that we know there are these different approaches, well, what are the animating issues that make it so complicated? Because there are benefits to being engaged in the secular studies. And as Dr. Lyman points out in the beginning of the article, even, let's say, the Vilna Gaon is probably the paradigmatic figure. If you were to pick one person who typifies what you might call Torah only, he says the Vilna Gaon was not Torah only. The Vilna Gaon, even though he only slept 2 hours a day and didn't have too much time for anything else, including his family, or he was Torah exclusively. But his Talmidim, as Dr. Lyman points out how the Vilna Gaon appreciated and valued the study, especially the study of mathematics and the study of music, probably based on he was also a great Kabbalist. So to say that there is Torah only is very difficult to maintain. But on that spectrum, there is lesser emphasis on engagement with the secular, and then more emphasis. Well, the benefits, even according to those who are on the leaner end of the schedule, well, what about the argument, which is where you'll find, let's say, in the more lean perspective, that these skills enable us to study Torah better? You want to learn Maseches Kilayim. Well, Maseches Kilayim is one of those difficult Masechtas for me because I haven't taken a maths class since 11th grade. I have 2 degrees and still haven't taken a math class because it's a hard thing. That's not my strength. Now, that's not an excuse. You have to then, if you're the Vilna Gaon, you could probably learn the geometry and the trigonometry from within. It was a little bit embarrassing that 2 weeks ago, Ilan had a math homework problem. And Nechama was in the other part of the house taking care of one of the other kids. So I said, I'll help you with it. So I sit down and we're scratching, we're scribbling. I'm yelling out, what is the square root of this? And asking Nechama in the other room. She comes in. I say, you know, we can't figure it out. She sits down in about 15 seconds. She draws it. She answers it. She's got it. They're on their way. So math is not my, I need the Groz math.
What grade is he?
He's in fifth grade, let's be honest. Fifth grade. It's tough, I'm telling you, it was not easy. The shape was weird. It wasn't a square or a triangle. I know what a triangle looks like. No, it was, I don't want to get into it. So the first, what's that?
The website, Khan Academy.
Yes.
To answer all
okay. That's right. Right, so I don't need that. I delegated. I write the papers, though. So the first argument is to say, well, if I don't understand mathematics, how am I going to figure out Maseches Kilayim and where I can plant? If I don't understand horticulture, how am I going to deal with Orla? Things like, you know, v'chahena v'chahena, the various disciplines that are necessary, especially in the realm of science and math, that are enabling us to understand Torah and Halacha better. What about Parnassa? Many people will argue that there is no inherent value in studying secular studies, but in the context in which getting a secular education for some is essential for a Parnassa, so then Parnassa is very important, and that's a separate discussion. But if a person requires a secular education to support themselves, so then maybe that would justify some measure on the side of secular education. There is some degree of necessity, even perhaps in the most cloistered communities, of being able to connect to the outside world. I like seeing in the New York Times on occasion, you know, on an election year, when various public officials make their way through Williamsburg and they're sitting at a table surrounded by fur, just fur hats. Even in a cloistered community, there is some necessity to be able to communicate with the outside world. If you're in Williamsburg, somebody there has to speak English to be able to speak to the handler of that politician who's just sitting there. Someone has to speak English. So on some level, there is going to be some bare necessity to function.
But they also need doctors and lawyers.
Right. So that also, you can even argue, and this is maybe a less direct need, but one could argue, well, wait a second, if the Jewish community doesn't have its own doctors, so then are we always going to be at the mercy of others whose expertise is wonderful but doesn't necessarily understand the values that we're coming from? And some might argue, we'll concede that. We're not going to send any of our kids, and our community will totally shut off and we'll leave it for somebody else. But that's a further argument that wouldn't it be worthwhile, you know, to have an OB who is a Ben Torah or a Bas Torah, somebody who is knowledgeable and sensitive in the areas of halacha, to be able to address very sensitive questions, fertility types of questions, these questions that require medical expertise, great medical expertise, right? Especially at a time, although this is before my time, I don't know how long, at what point this changed. It's not secret that there was a time when Jews weren't allowed in certain medical schools or law schools or other professional guilds or trades. So that itself, you know, is a whole nother question. But then the last benefit, which may be the most controversial and the most, in a certain sense, ambitious or out there, is the way that Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, describes the concept of a spiritual personality. Our goal as human beings is to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to refine ourselves in our connection to Hashem Yisbarach. So we can look at Torah as the totality of our spiritual enterprise, meaning it is Torah and that is everything. Or we can look at the Torah, and we'll talk about this more later in Rav Lichtenstein Inside, as the central focus. But there is a difference, a subtle difference, between totality and centrality. Totality means there's nothing else. I'll check with the law scholars. Is that correct? That's a fair distinction?
Fair.
They also learned in Gush, so even though... Totality means it's everything. Centrality means it's the central point, but it's not everything. And that it plays the central role in the development of my spiritual personality. But there could be other things. There could be the Chachma Bagayim that could even fill out a person's spiritual personality. And those transcend the more limited and technical and utilitarian disciplines like science and math and expand into the realms of the humanities, where perhaps a person is looking to put into words a feeling and a connection that they have with godliness, or a tefillah. Well, if you were one of the Spanish Rishonim in the 11th century, you probably read, or you may have read, Arabic poetry. And that Arabic poetry gave you the tools and the way to express yourself in an artistic way that you then translated into maybe what we call piyutim. But maybe that style came about, you developed that style, you expressed that style through your understanding and learning of piyutim that came from another place. A literary style that's totally alien to Kedusha, to Torah itself. And then even beyond that, not just from a technical adopting that, but just the idea of filling out experiences. Rav Lichtenstein argues that very often we can, through nuance and the relationship between Kodesh and Chol, we can develop our spiritual personality through the use of secular wisdom. That is a very ambitious formulation, which we could talk about more at length. But those are some of the benefits, potentially. But there are also dangers. The moment we open ourselves up to the world of secular knowledge, we have to be mindful of the fact, and Rav Lichtenstein articulates that in the article, one of the articles in here, that there is a significant danger. You know, it's not a secret that the Enlightenment brought radical changes to European Jews. And one of those changes was, I wouldn't use the word a wholesale exodus, but I would say a definite crisis, as the P.S. Etzner writes in the Chovos HaTalmidim, of young people who ran away from Yiddishkeit to embrace gymnasiot and secular learning and all of the culture that was sweeping across Europe in the wake of the Enlightenment. So if we engage in that, we run the risk of being swept up in the tide of secularism and losing our connection to Yiddishkeit completely. And that is a real concern. And when we talk about these dangers, we need to think about these dangers and how they play out, not in, you know, in 1815 or 1812 in Eastern Europe, what they look like in 2018 in America and in the world. And you could argue that they're more acute now, less acute, whatever it is. There is the concern about values, that we have Torah values. Moshe Kibbutz Torah Mi Sinai, the Pirkei Avos came from Sinai, the values come from Sinai. Well, when we open ourselves up to studying secular knowledge, especially in the realm of humanities, where values are being espoused that do not come from Torah roots, so then we run the risk of adopting secular values that are often not just a little bit out of sync with the Torah outlook, but they are sometimes incompatible. They're antithetical to Torah values. Sometimes that comes from the substance of the issue that's being taught, and sometimes it comes from the context or the attitude. So we need to understand that that is a challenge. And then the most basic, simple issue is the question of, how do we allocate time? Somebody who spends 10 hours a day immersing themselves in the world of Torah learning and is drinking from the wellspring of Mayim Chayim, of the Ribbono Shel'olam's divine knowledge, how are you going to allocate some of that time, that precious, limited, finite resource that we have, and devote it to something else? So these are the cheshbonos that everyone is making. These are the cheshbonos that we're asking. So Rav Schwab asked this question in the early 30s. He then published a short letter on this in 1939 in HaPardes. Then in the 1960s, you saw he writes the Elu Ve'elu, these and those, and he goes back and forth, because it's not so simple. There are values and there are dangers. And it could be that even if we were to plot ourselves at one point in this continuum, on this spectrum, ideologically, principally, practically, we might stake out a different position. Because even if we believe one thing, but we are concerned about some pragmatic issue, so it's very complicated. The most important thing, and now we're going to transition to the specific perspectives, is that I think we need to constantly be examining this issue and asking ourselves these questions as we navigate life. Where does the Ribbono Shel Olam fit in this? It's not so much a question of what your answer is to these two sides of the equation, the advantages versus the disadvantages, the benefits versus the risks. You know what the challenge is? Are we asking the question? Before we make the decision, are we asking, how does this fit within my Avodas Hashem? So when Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadok V'Kadosh Levracha, was here in Skokie, and someone asked him on this panel discussion, he gave an extremely nuanced answer to his to the questioner about secular studies and secular college. And I think I was struck by the fact that I think I was maybe naive at the time, because somebody walked out of that, and I think they made some kind of comment summarizing Rabbi Lichtenstein's view in one sentence, which is already impossible to do, saying, yeah, Rabbi Lichtenstein said it's fine to go to secular college. And I was thinking, were you at the same talk that I just went to? I'm not sure we were at the same talk. The whole Rav Lichtenstein approach was to say, we need to ask this question through the prism of Avodas Hashem and think about all of these different perspectives. So different Chachmei HaMasorah have viewed it differently. And let's look at several of them. The first one, this page 5 is a letter. On the bottom you see the handwriting of this letter. This is written in the late 1930s from the Rebbe Elchanan Wasserman. This is not the letter back to Rav Schwab. This is a different letter to a student of his. It's published in the Kovetz Ma'amarim Ve'igros. I forget the name. I have it written down. The name of the man who asked him this question. It was about getting a visa to come to America. And Rebbe Elchanan said the following. I got your letter. Ve'in b'yadi lasos b'zeh. Lefichach lo hishavtia. I can't do this, and therefore I didn't answer you. But now look what Rabbi Elchanan says. Hayeshivas ba'America, hayecholos lahavi talmidim, the yeshivas in America that can bring students with visas from Europe, haim yeshivas Dr. Revel, hamachuna yeshiva university, bin New York, u beis medrash l'torah, bit Chicago. Says Rabbi Elchanan. Ushtein hein bekomos sakana beruchnius. They are both places of spiritual danger. Ki, why? Mishalchos beruas beruach chofshius. Because they are led with this spirit of freedom of inquiry, meaning there's involved in secular studies. Uma betza levroach misakana gashmius. Why would you run away from a physical danger and leave Europe just to go l'sakana ruchnius? Don't go to Yeshiva College, don't go to Reitz, and don't go to HTC, because those are spiritually dangerous places, says Rabbi Elchanan. Rather, I did send a letter to Agon Rav Shlomo Hyman, who was in Torah Vadas in Brooklyn, and he said you should check in with him. And this address, Rav Shlomo Hyman, Marmon, Saint, I can't read what that says, 92 America. So this is one perspective. Sigizund. Then introducing secular studies into learning is the sakana ruchanis. It's a spiritual danger. Go to page 6. Here, Rav Baruch Ber Leibovitz, the close disciple of Rav Chaim HaLevi Soloveitchik, Tshuva L'Rav Echad Ba'ashkenaz, Simon Chav Zayin, this is printed in his Birka Shmuel, his teachings on Maseches Kiddushin, Tshuva L'Rav Echad, an answer to one rabbi, doesn't say his name, Ba'ashkenaz, where? In Germany. He says, Hine, Mashinis Oru Chilukim, there are differences between people who those who have Torah only, or they are those who follow Rav Hirsch. You want to know, what do I think about this? Go to the second paragraph where the little arrow is. It's interesting that Rav Baruch Ber, he relates to Rav Hirsch with the utmost reverence and respect. Incredibly honorific titles. He calls him Moreno Harav, Zatzal, Hatzadik. He says, I have to tell you the truth. Where the arrow is. I have to tell you what I think, according to the Torah. Chas v'sholom lomar she'al piyadas ha-Torah kedosha she'itnu Yisrael b'neim le'gymnaziot. God forbid students should go to the gymnasium. V'rak she'agon ha-tzadak reb shimshon refol hirsal asazos why? Mipnei shehura kol kach es ra'al ha-pitoy shel ha-skala. He saw the danger and the appeal of the Haskalah. Boer, it was burning, it was attracting students. Vaday bevaisa bevaday kavonas hatzadik shal yedeze yeshuvu l'tshuva shlema behemchech hazman kishiyit amutama shel haTorah. It was just a way of getting the students to engage with Torah, and once they did that, they'll obviously embrace the Torah lifestyle and they'll abandon the pursuit of the Haskalah. Baruch Ber is saying Rav Hirsch never meant Torah and Derech Eretz as an ideal, certainly not as an educational philosophy. It was just a way of keeping students from totally abandoning Judaism altogether. And then Baruch Ber goes on, much longer in this siman, to share his views. So this is another perspective on the continuum. However, if you move to a different voice, and we're not going to see this entire introduction, Imir Tzashem Yisbarach, we should all be well, and we should be in Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh. I already have plans that for next year, Imir Tzashem, I have a whole idea of what we're going to do on Sunday mornings, and this is going to be one of it. So don't worry, we're going to get back to the rest of this. This is very important. This is the Hakdama. People are thinking, I don't even know what I'm doing for lunch. What do you worry about next year? Hakmanishkin Chinik, you know what I'm saying? Halavai, we should all be well for next year. We'll deal with next year. I'm just saying that I have in the back of my mind. This, was that right? This Hakdama is the Hakdama of the Sri Eish. Rev Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who was a remarkable personality. We don't have time to talk about it at length. He was the last Rosh HaRabbonim of the Beis Medrash LaRabbonim in Berlin. He was one of the great giants of the Eastern European orbit of Talmidei Chachamim, and also a PhD and a university professor. He comes to, after the death of Rav David Zvi Hoffman, Zecher Tzadik L'Kavosh L'Vracha, the author of the Shailos and Tshuvos Melamed L'Hoel, he becomes the Rosh Hashiva of the Beis Medrash Rabbanim in Berlin, which was also known as the Hildesheimer Rabbinical Seminary. Why was it known as this? Because it was founded by Rav Azriel Hildesheimer, who was a contemporary of Rabbi Hirsch. They had some differences, which is what Dr. Lyman talks about in his piece. But he was also a student of the Aruch Laner, Rav Yaakov Etlinger, who was also the Rav of Rav Hirsch. So now, this is the Sri Eish, the great Gaon of his generation. Life story, not for right now. He writes the Hakdama to the Tshuvas, what this yeshiva was all about, and what the ideology of this yeshiva was all about. He says it was founded, top line, just let's start from there, this little piece. Rav Israel Hildesheimer, Haya Gaon, Talmudi. He was a Talmudic giant. Ubal Haskola Madoes Makifa, and also a well-learned scientific student. B'shiva el Makoros Hayados Be'ion Valimid B'Shas and Poskim, by returning to the classical learning of Shas and Poskim, of B'Sifrus Hagaonim V'Harabonis Hagadola, Roa Es Aruva Yoser B'Tucho La'Achzores Tiferes Hayados L'Kadmusa. He said, we need to return Jews to Judaism. So you know how we're going to do that? By going back to traditional learning. Gemara, Shas, Poskim. Avol. Who darash me talmidav shabal yaznichu es ha'avoda besode chachmas Yisrael al yisodas ha'mesora. Do not only abandon the learning to the traditional learning. That's not enough. Who ta'an, he said, ki lo maspik b'yameinu sha'harabonim yedu perek bo'oros iser v'heter kashas and treifus. It's not enough that the rabbis know how to paskin shilas and yorodea. Tum of v'tara, bevadai, shebevadayim yisoda yisodas b'chayadus. That's the basics, obviously. They have to stand before the big world. And to demonstrate the truth of Judaism, traditional Judaism, the Masorah Judaism, to the entire world. Before secular knowledge. Al Rabbanim Kenosei Dover Dvar Hashem, lahazbir la'am v'la'olam es das hayadus al kol habayos. They have to be able to address all the questions. Shel ha-musar, shel ha-mishpat, v'shel ha-tikun ha-sociali, sh'ador ha-chodesh miskabit ben. We're struggling with all of these questions. We have to be able to give Jewish answers. Rabbanim, aleim lo'oros ki'ein ha-yadus osef shel chukim u-mishpat u-minhagim datiyim b'lvad. It's not just a collection of rituals and rabbinic laws, says Rav Hildesheimer, and that is going to be the program, so says the Sri Deish. Ki im ha-koach ruchani machriya b'chayeho anoshius. And therefore, we have to have everything. Not only that, goes on the Sri Deish, he says that Rav Hildesheimer told the students, you know what we need to learn how to do? You need to learn how to give a sermon. Because he says, Adrasha, yesh hashpa gedola bedor. There's a tremendous influence that rabbis should be able to give drashos. So while in the Chasam Sofer's community, they didn't allow drashos in foreign languages, Rav Hildesheimer told the Rabbanim, he says, you boys need to learn, but you also need to learn how to give drashos, how to darshan. And these Bachrim became Rabbanim all throughout Germany. So as Rav Schwab writes in his article, for many generations there were few Gedolei Olam, there were few Torah giants that were produced in Germany before Rav Hirsch's school. Those came from Eastern Europe. But at the same time, many have observed that this path of Rav Hildesheimer and a similar, not exactly the same, but the Torah Derech Eretz Rav Hirsch philosophy, maybe it didn't produce Gedolim, but what was the impact on the general German community versus the impact of the more Torah-only focus of Eastern European yeshivas on the vast swaths of Eastern European simple Jews who got swept away? That's for historians to analyze. That's beyond my pay scale and knowledge. But the idea that it's not Torah only, and that's part of engaging the world, and not just for Balabatim. Well, you know, you could say Balabatim is good, they should read literature. This is Rabbanim. This is the Beis Medrash Rabbanim who sent students to become Mori Hora all throughout Germany. And he describes how it wasn't even just meant for Rabbanim, it was meant for everybody. And so he describes how Kimat every area of Germany, they had Rabbanim who came, who graduated from Rav Hildesheimer's yeshiva, who influenced their communities. So this is another way of looking at it. It's a different approach. So we need to find how do we navigate these things, and then we come back, of course, and this is where we'll conclude, with Rav Lichtenstein's perspective. Rav Lichtenstein talks about, both in this chapter, which is chapter 4, a consideration of synthesis from a Torah point of view. Also, there's some more discussion about this in the next chapter, in chapter 5, the end of learning. Rav Lichtenstein, in his own writings, and it's much more expanded here in this piece called Torah and General Culture, Confluence and Conflict, talks about all the different facets and the nuances, and on one hand, and on the other hand, and then the other hand. As you well know, Rav Lichtenstein was kind of like an octopus. He had many hands. You know, there was on this hand, and this, and this, and this, you know, so multifaceted. But Rav Lichtenstein lived and breathed this idea of synthesis. And just look on the first page of any essay and the wide variety of sources that he's quoting. And the same thing he quotes from Rav Soloveitchik. You know, philosophers that I can't even pronounce their name know what they had to say. So these are important things. But I want to end with one point, and this is where it takes it back. There was a great controversy several years ago, and this year is a good time to revisit that controversy. It's always the controversy, and this year its controversy is back for breakfast because it's the Rav's 25th yard site. So if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Rabbi Braunspiegel who caused a little bit of a stir after the Rav passed away, who said, well, what was the Rav? The Rav was a Lamdin. I went to the Rav's apartment many times in Morg. I never saw the Rav open a secular book. Now, this caused a lot of consternation because Was he trying to say that the Rav didn't believe in secular studies? Of course he believed in secular studies. The whole back and forth. But the same question that Rabbi Braunspiegel was kind of creating a controversy about the Rav could be asked about Rav Lichtenstein. How many times did you see Rav Lichtenstein sit on night of Yom Kippur all night at his shtender reading Milton? I don't know. I wasn't a close disciple of Lichtenstein. He impacted our life in a tremendous way. But when I asked his wife, she should live me well, last year when she was here, I said to her, how did your father and how did your husband become such enormous giants? She said, a simple thing. They learned for hours. She said, my father closed the door and learned for hours. My husband closed the door and learned for hours. I remember being at Rav Lichtenstein Shir in Gruss, and he would give out the Mar Makomos. It's mind-boggling. The level of knowledge was off the charts, and it didn't come from reading Milton. Now, Rav Lichtenstein, of course, was well-versed probably than most professors of literature in most American universities in the world of literature. But at the same time, whatever this discussion is going to be, value of secular studies, not value of secular studies, we can't lose the heart and the soul of it. At the end of the day, yes, Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Soloveitchik were extremely knowledgeable and utilized and loved. They really loved the world at large, the secular world, the knowledge, the good knowledge that was out there. That was why she joked last year, the Rebbetzin, Dr. Lichtenstein, that he only appreciated good culture. That's why he hasn't read anything since the 17th century. That's what she's saying. But at the end of the day, he was a goan and he was a tzaddik. That fit into his core personality. And that's why in this article, if you start, he says, we have to have three assumptions. The third assumption has to do with the insight into divine wisdom and how we incorporate it. But the first, the most basic, second paragraph. The first must be a clear and unwavering recognition of the primacy of Torah as a way of life. This we posit as the supreme value, in a sense, as the only value. Fulfilling our spiritual destinies, furthering in ourselves and others the development of Torah, strengthening and deepening our consciousness and experience of God, stimulating our love, fear, and knowledge of Him. This is the Alpha and the Omega. You see, he uses the Greek terms, but that's not about studying Greek. It's about the relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Our first, last, ever-present goal. Religion demands an axiological monopoly. Yichud Hashem means simply that religion alone has absolute and comprehensive value. Everything else, no matter how socially or intellectually desirable, has only relative and secondary importance. Its worth is derived solely from the extent to which it contributes, however remotely, to the fulfillment of the divine will. On this point, there can be no compromise and should be no misunderstanding. A man's religion means everything or it means nothing. And then the second point is about the life of Torah, the Chayei Torah, being predicated on Talmud Torah. Lo Am HaAretz Chassid. So yes, many of us and our community as a whole, we place ourselves firmly on the spectrum, viewing the positive, valuable aspects of secular knowledge in different ways, in different facets, to different extents. But no matter what, that all comes on top of, in addition to, or as an enhancement of our core life, which is the life of Torah study that needs to animate everything that we do. So it's important that we keep coming back to that source, to that conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and figuring out how we navigate the complexity from within this Chayei Torah, this life of Torah, and our Torah personality. Have a great week. Thank you.